Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. Good to have it with us here right on the Mark Steiner Show on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. We're having our international roundtable here in the first part of the program. I want you to join us at 410-319-8888. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. Comment on the Mark Steiner Show Facebook page or send us an email to talkatsteinershow.org. But if you can, do call in 410-319-8888 and join Bhaskar Sunkara, who is founding editor of Jacobin, senior editor at In These Times, and Sam Faddis, who is a retired CIA ops officer, author of numerous books, the most recent one a novel, Kaffa, and is a candidate in the 5th District for Congress on the Republican primary. And Bhaskar and Sam, good to have you with us.
Great to be here.
Thanks for having us.
410-319-8888. It was just announced also, just to let people know, here in Baltimore, who are listening in our home city, that Baltimore has pledged to take 12,000 Syrian refugees into the city of Baltimore and to find homes and places for them over the course of the year. Let's begin there. I mean, we're seeing, I think the number, Bhaskar, is 450,000 refugees, and of course there's an argument of whether we use the word refugees or migrant, which we'll talk about in a moment, but going into Europe. So, I mean, about the root of this and what our response has been so far from your analysis.
Well, I mean, I think it's actually quite a bit more in the total refugee count. I mean, it's actually, it's really incredible. There's many millions of people, not only from Syria, but also from Ethiopia, Eritrea, Nigeria, largely fleeing violence. So the reason why we use the term refugee here is just because a migrant applies a degree of choice. And obviously when people are migrating or immigrating for economic reasons, obviously it's not 100% their choice. There's many social and economic causes of this dislocation. But in this case, it's something very, very acute, like war and famine and so on. So right now, there are 19 million people who've been forced to leave their home countries because of war, persecution, or oppression. And around 42,000 join them every day. So, and a lot of these people are obviously trying to head to Europe. So, yeah, it's a tremendous, tremendous crisis. So far, the response from Europe has been less than adequate. Thousands have already died trying to get in the country, and this is something that's been going on for a long time. There was a lot of death and disorder in the Mediterranean, the 2012-2013, with migrants trying to get from Libya to Italy, and that kind of was briefly getting attention in the media, but that kind of has drifted away. So right now, the response of Europe has been to take in some of these refugees, but not with much enthusiasm. In the border states, they really are trying to make sure they're not being overwhelmed by this influx of refugees. Germany has agreed to take a little bit more than the other countries, but the response by a lot of Western nations has been very subpar. There's a figure about the amount of people the U.S. has taken in, and so far it's in the hundreds. In 2013, there were 2.5 million Syrian refugees. The U.S. took 36 of them. And right now, our pledge is to take, around 10,000 total in the next year, which is, really, really just a very small dent in the crisis.
Yeah, and I misspoke at the very top of the hour. Baltimore's not taking 10,000. They're coming to maybe 1,000 refugee families, 1,000 refugees coming to Baltimore City, and 10 for the country. Sam?
Yeah, well, I agree with everything that's been said. It's a massive problem. I guess my first comment up front would be, a definitional issue of what constitutes a refugee, and I think it is important. And I think before we get into the business of moving folks here, we need to establish some principles as to what the criteria are. I mean, right now, the Syrians are attracting a lot of attention because they're making it into Western Europe and they're ending up in the Western press. So CNN is flooding us with pictures of Syrian refugees and people are focused on it. But if the criteria for refugees is folks that are being, they're coming from areas that are torn by war and conflict, well, that includes a lot more than Syrians and probably includes a lot more than just 19 million people. I mean, probably includes hundreds of millions of people.
So let's talk about this for a moment. And I think it's a political definition. It's a social definition. Bhaskar, let's begin this discussion first. I think what we mean by migrant, when we see certain press using migrant and other people using the word refugee, and how you parse that out.
Yeah, so I mean, I think migrant implies people who are leaving often very harsh conditions, but largely like long term conditions of poverty, and are economically being dislocated. But I think refugee implies that it's much more acute. It's often brought on because of war or famine or something like that. And I think that, you know, first of all, I mean, in my view, obviously I've been on this show many times. Many of your viewers know. You know, I'm a socialist. I have the view that, you know, people should be able to freely live where they want, while at the same time critiquing the reasons why people leave their homes to begin with, which a lot of times are not just by choice, it's because they're kind of they're being forced out. So at the same time, you know, believing in free movement, but also saying that, you know, if things were better, if these countries were more developed, if they had more resources, a lot of people wouldn't want to leave in the same numbers to begin with. But I do think the difference is important because, you know, when we use the word refugee, it's been used in the discourse of humanitarian discourses and liberal discourses for the last, 100 years, really. And this term kind of, I think implies that these people are fleeing something with the best of intentions, and they need to be taken care of right away. Migrant implies a steady flow that's been happening for a long time. And I think by using the word refugee, we're really letting people know that, you know, a lot of these Syrians, a lot of these people fleeing Ethiopia, Eritrea, they absolutely are fleeing out of total desperation. And we need to act immediately to try to figure out, how do we put these people into humane situations, get them relocated, get them safe, and ultimately reminding people they're going to be really contributing to society. So I think sometimes when people talk about this crisis, they just think that we're going to create camps or different houses and just have these people stay, you know, separated. But the whole point is that, you know, people across the board should be able to agree, from neoliberal on the right to socialists on the left, that, you know, these people have integrated into a society and an economy, are producing value, they're, you know, producing wealth. A lot of them have the ability to contribute right away. So, you know, I think often this discourse comes down to a zero-sum game. How many people can we support? What kind of burden can we support? Instead of actually seeing the way in which open, liberalized immigration policies can actually help ordinary people and society as a whole.
So, Sam, what would you posit then in terms of what a policy should be and how you parse that difference? I mean, if you look at people fleeing Syria and Afghanistan, they're refugees. If you look at people who are fleeing war as refugees, and the disasters taking place throughout North Africa, I mean, that because of the wars that in part were created by the United States, you're seeing another series of people fleeing. They could be migrants, refugees. I mean, how do you parse that out?
Well, let me start with this. I mean, unless there are folks obviously who believe that in effect we should have open borders. If you don't believe that we should have open borders, it becomes then critical, this issue of definition, because unless you're just going to say that everyone can come, then you have to establish some criteria, and I think that's a huge deal, because the scope of what you're talking about is mind-boggling. Right now, we're just talking about Syria. You were using a figure of 10,000 in Baltimore.
I was a mistake. I meant 10,000 in this country, 1,000 in Baltimore. That was my mistake. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, on Saturday, they reported that 10,000 people arrived in Munich, one city in Germany, alone at the train station.
Right.
On one day. So, and now we're just talking, I mean, about 80% of these folks that are flooding into Europe right now, present time, are Syrian, as far as I can tell. So we're dealing with a country, one location, 10,000 folks a day arriving in one city. Now, start, as you just suggested, We could probably classify about a third of Nigeria as being a war zone. We could classify big chunks of northern Africa. By this point, you can probably make an argument that big chunks of the Ukraine are a war zone. I think unless you're willing to say we should have open borders, that you're going to have to come up with a pretty restrictive definition. You can't simply say that everyone who lives in a current conflict zone constitutes a refugee. Because if you go down that road, I think you are talking hundreds and hundreds of millions of people. And I just don't think that's... I mean, we all feel for these people. I'm not trying to be insensitive. It's not sustainable. Nobody has the resources. And I would, by the way, I'll just throw this out. You are going to see in the very near future, you're already seeing, that the Europeans are not going to fulfill their pledges for the number of people that they're taking. I mean, everybody in the EU has been okay so far, generally okay in a very nebulous sense, because the unstated premise is everybody's going to Germany. They're all passing through. They're all headed for Germany. The Germans are not going to continue to swallow that number of people. And this morning I was reading the Greek press, and they're already melting down because it is beginning to occur to them that these people might not be moving on and they might actually be stuck trying to house them and so forth. And this is a country that's having a great deal of trouble feeding and employing its own people.
So, I mean, there was a breakdown from the very beginning here when refugees flooded into Lebanon, Jordan, and Turkey, and there was very little response from the West or the Gulf states to kind of do anything to help people, anything to alleviate the crisis, anything permanent that would to deal with what this crisis might mean for the years it might take to resolve. So, you know, Bhaskar, I mean, when you take it from the perspective, especially your perspective as on the left and as a socialist, I mean, what needs to be the response? I mean, I think that...
Well, let me just clarify one thing.
Go ahead.
One thing where I would agree with your guest is that when I say that I advocate even as interim measure open borders, it doesn't just mean you just immediately let there's no process. You know, it just means that you find out ways to like allow people who want to come to a given place to get there safely. It's not pure anarchy. You don't have, we don't want people, you know, drowning on their way to Europe. We don't want, you know, absolute chaos. We want people to be processed and documented and get the services they need and be incorporated in these systems and then incorporated in the economy so that they're, you know, joining with their crafts, their trades, they're becoming workers, they're becoming productive members of society, which, you know, the vast majority, almost all of these people want, which is a little bit different than the idea of just, you know, just complete apathy, not paying attention to the responsibility of nations to make sure these people are taken care of. You know, when it comes to the actual, you know, international situation led to this dislocation, I mean, there is no doubt that the United States played a role and a responsibility, and these other European countries did as well. In Libya, there was intervention, but way back in the 1980s, there was intervention by all Western powers and, you know, the Soviet Union and others in Ethiopia. And the creation of Eritrea was very confusing, I think, to study politically because the sides constantly shifted, but China was involved, Russia was involved, everyone was involved there. In the Syrian civil war, you're seeing a tremendous flow of arms and military support from the United States, from Iran, from Russia to various different factions in the Syrian civil war. And especially, I think, pernicious has been the role of Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states. So obviously, if these countries all feel like they have willingness and ability to intervene militarily in these regions, they all would also have to take responsibility for some of the consequences of their actions, and one of that is a refugee crisis. So obviously, you know, as a socialist, we pay attention to both the immediate after effects, but also the causes of this and what possible alternatives would be, what kind of foreign policy would prevent these things from happening to begin with.
So, Sam, what both of you have just been saying, and when we kind of look at the breadth of the issue around the world, and it is deep. I mean, you're both political figures, and Sam, you've thrown your hat into the ring, which makes you a political figure in another right as well. And you know, if you look at the world at the moment, if we look at the tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions, of refugees and potential refugees and migrants for economic reasons, social reasons, because of wars. I mean, when you look at what we did in Iraq, and you and I have been talking about Iraq on this air since the early part of this century, that war has torn apart Iraq. We've seen Syria torn apart. We've seen Libya torn apart. We've seen the Middle Eastern societies just being torn asunder because of this, whether you agree with the state governments that they are not, or like them or not, that stability has been blown open and we have anarchy. And we helped create these fundamentalist groups that are now waging war against people across the Middle East. So there is a sense of responsibility here in the United States. So it has to be, because you're right, I think you're going to see what's happening in Europe keep happening across the globe in the coming decades, unless you begin to figure out what system puts in place to deal with the crisis that we're facing.
Yeah, well, I mean, you and I have, as you say, talked about Iraq and a number of other issues for many years, and I have been, I think, a pretty direct critic of quite a bit of our policy. So I'm not denying that. I do think that an argument that somehow posits the idea that the Middle East would be stable and prosperous were it not for mistakes made by the Americans is ignoring a host of other factors. I mean, the reality is that in the Middle East, all across sub-Saharan Africa, big chunks of the planet, there are a lot of huge geopolitical reasons why these countries are going to continue to see massive unrest and dislocation and wars and conflict. And I wish I could tell you that I think that that's all going to get better sometime soon, and I don't think it is. I think as far out as you can see, that's the reality. So unless you're willing to support a policy that says, let everybody move here, you're going to have to set some standards and be, I think, pretty restrictive about who you let in. We do not have the capacity to allow 2 billion people to relocate from sub-Saharan Africa and the Middle East to Western Europe and the United States. You don't have the capacity economically. You're certainly never politically going to get support for that. So, you know, it makes people feel better to talk about relocating a few thousand people. The entire United States or whatever is going to move 10,000 people here. What is that? Like I said, 10,000 people showed up in Munich on Saturday on trains. You know, that's a Band-Aid solution. It's a symbol. It's not even much of a symbol. The solution is not moving all these people to Western Europe and the United States. It's stability, economic growth, all kinds of things in the regions where they come from.
Bosco, to take it from your perspective, I mean, this is what we're facing globally. I think is a larger crisis than I can remember in my lifetime since World War II in terms of refugees and dislocation.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, I don't disagree with all that. I think in particular, it's worth noting that you know, one can't draw a direct line to every situation in Africa, every situation in the Middle East, to just the single factor of U.S. foreign policy. That's absolutely true. But it is also true that one of the reasons why these regions, let's say the Middle East, is so disunited, one of the reasons why there is no coherent, stable alternative that can push a developmentalist an alternative that actually brings jobs, stability, growth, economic prosperity to this region, is partially because whenever some alternatives in that direction emerge, Arab nationalism, for instance, and other things in its, you know, its early Nasserist stage, other movements further to the left in the region before it, are always reached the hostility of the United States. So I think, on the one hand, you can't just draw a straight line to terrible crimes like the Iraq War and everything that's going on here. You could also say that the United States was also very hostile to any alternative that was bubbling up and trying to emerge out of these post-colonial states. Now, as far as what we can actually do in the short term, we know that not every single person in Syria is leaving that country. We know that not every single person in sub-Saharan Africa is getting up and uprooting and trying to go to the West. There's a certain number of people who are, and they're here and they're in Europe. And right now, our response has to start with, I think, on a very normative level, our moral and ethical obligation to treat these people like humans, to integrate them the best we can, and get them housing and jobs and make them contribute in the economy. And a lot of them will want to go home when the situation gets better in their home country. A lot of them will want to stay on. But, yeah, I think we're talking about something that is very easy if there is political will for Western countries to take care of. The numbers are not completely – the numbers are astronomical by the standards of previous flows of refugees, but the numbers are still nothing that if this burden was distributed more evenly in Europe, if the United States took a stronger role and brought in 250,000 instead of 10,000. You know, these are things that a very large country, 330 million people, are capable of doing. And a lot of our barriers are political ones, and they're ones that come about because of, centrist politicians pattering to right-wing discourses instead of sitting down and figuring out how to make sure that this burden is shared across developed nations. And also that, how the West can actually contribute to a peace process in a place like Syria and other places that, to prevent, stop the reason for dislocation to begin with.
There's a great deal more to be said here, but we have to end the segment here. And I do want to thank you both. This has been really fascinating to hear those perspectives. Our listeners need to have that. Bhaskar Sankara is founding editor of Jacobin, senior editor at In These Times. Charles Faddis is a retired CIA ops officer, author of numerous books, including his most recent novel, Kaffa, and is a candidate in the 5th District running in the Republican primary to face Steny Hoyer. And Sam and Bhaskar, thank you both so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And on our way to break, I want to remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information at www.mecu.com or at steinershow.org is MeQ, Baltimore Credit Union's banner. This year celebrates the 100th anniversary of the birth of Billie Holiday. And when we return from break, we learn about the exhibit currently showing at the UB Blake National Jazz Institute and Cultural Center called Billie Holiday, A Life in Music, with Stuart Hudgens, curator of this exhibit. Stay with us.